Hey everyone, thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Paris Schutz. We'll be joined by our Week in Review guests in a moment. But first, after nearly 200 days, the Chicago Police Department has a permanent superintendent.
I just try to do what's right. And I find that that's the most important thing. Just try to do what's right. And in this role, I'll continue to do that.
Larry Snelling takes the reins as superintendent of police after unanimous city council vote. Snelling asks for fairness in judging police.
We have to utilize technology to make sure that we're able to track these individuals.
And immediately gets questions on the rash of robberies across the city.
What does the city do? We live up to our values. We say, welcome. We're going to try our frickin' hardest to integrate you and protect you.
Some progressive alder people blast Governor Pritzker for a perceived lack of help with Chicago's migrant crisis as busloads continue to arrive.
I believe we can secure the border, get the funding needed to keep government up and running.
In Washington, the federal government careens toward a shutdown due to yet another manufactured political crisis. And in sports,
Mahomes wide open, McKinnon, he's in again! Touchdown, Chiefs!
How low can it go? The Bears get drubbed by the Chiefs, the Cubs are all but eliminated from the playoffs, and the Sox look to close out a miserable last-place season. But hope springs eternal for the Blackhawks and young phenom Connor Bedard.
Always got to have hope for something here, but I have hope for a great panel right now, and they are joining us. Craig Delamore of WBBM News Radio, our very own Heather Cerrone, Dan Mihalopoulos of WBEZ, and Matt Spiegel of 670 The Score. Let's get right to it. You saw some of that introductory speech from Larry Snelling, Craig Delamore. After all this talk about police reform, did it surprise you at all that he focused a lot of that speech on defending the police, or at least judging them fairly?
No, because one of the problems he is going to face going in and seemed ready to take on immediately was the morale problem on the police department. So he wanted to make sure that being appointed by a progressive mayor, a city council that is leaning progressive now, he wanted to make sure that police knew he was going to back them up if they did the right thing. And he was very clear about that, too. So he was He played to a number of audiences during that speech. It was a wonderful speech, and he's also proving to be quite the communicator. He knows his audience. He reads the room. That's going to serve him well, not just with the city council, but I think probably with the public.
No doubt a very effective communicator, very deep voice, and a very effective speech. Heather Cerrone, some of the Democratic Socialists or progressive alder people, though, their biggest concern is police accountability. So how did it go over with them?
So I think he really sort of caused some progressive alder people to sort of have maybe a little bit second thoughts, because he said that he wanted to see Black and Latino Chicagoans protesting violence, when, of course, Black and Latino Chicagoans do protest violence, and they're the ones who have to live with it every day. And I think that did not strike a great note, and he will be under intense pressure now. Is the third Chicago police superintendent to have to implement the consent decree, which is more than 4 years old at this point and only 5% complete. I tried to press him on what he would consider a success in a year, what percentage complete. He said he couldn't give me a figure, but he wanted significant progress. That's no different than we heard from Eddie Johnson, David Brown, and now Larry Snelling.
Does that strike you, Dan Mihalopoulos, that maybe he isn't taking the consent decree as serious as the reform crowd wants him to?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have two poles here right now, and every mayor and every police superintendent is going to try to balance people that want accountability and people that want more aggressive policing, frankly, for violence, this perception that crime is up. Well, you know, we can break it down 50 different ways, and in general, actually, no, violent crime is down. Some other property crimes are up. At the end of the day, when you are the police superintendent, you still have to command all these guys. Like Craig said, morale is very important, but you're dealing with a public that there's a vast gulf between a lot of the people that are supposed to be protected and served and this police force in this city, absolutely since Laquan.
And Dan mentioned, Matt Spiegel, that violent crime is down, but carjackings, robberies, way up. How do you hope that Snelling tackles these things as he leads the police department?
I hope that he's got a firm and comfortable grasp of the politics. That sure seemed very strong the way he came off today, and then he can quickly shift and think about police issues and think about commanding all those forces and working on it. I live in the city. I live in the South Loop, and a lot of these issues have come very, very close, if not right to the front door. So I hope there's time and focus for him to be where he needs to be.
And, you know, he had a press conference right away, right after that, kind of grilled on, what are you going to do about robberies? As Heather said, what are you going to do about the consent decree? What are the first things that he does as he gets off and running here leading this department?
Well, I think he's clear that his job is to restore the morale, as Craig said. There's no doubt about that. That's what we heard from him consistently after his appointment. That's going to mean sort of figuring out how to schedule the department, ensure that officers don't get their days off canceled repeatedly as it happened under David Brown, which was a huge impact on morale. He's also going to have to show that if something happens, if there's some sort of horrible shooting or some sort of incident, that he's going to have to walk that line. How much of a honeymoon is he going to get? Nobody knows, but it's Chicago, so it's probably not going to be that long.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be really a honeymoon, because I think a lot of the Alder people know him. A lot of people in the neighborhoods do know him already. So I think he hits the ground running. But one thing that I thought was very key in his initial news conference was he made a point of thanking Mayor Johnson for being a good listener. Mm. And that came out of nowhere.
And maybe their philosophies are a bit divergent, but Johnson is going to kind of accede to his expertise.
Well, the end of that statement, after thanking him for being a good listener and saying that the mayor heard me, he said, the mayor understands I have a job to do. I understand he has a job to do, and I support it. But he knows that I am the superintendent. So he was very clear that he's going to run the police department. Remember, that was an issue with David Brown and Lori Lightfoot.
Right.
We're immediately going to see this tested. Brandon Johnson has to reveal his budget in a little bit more than a week, and everybody's going to be scouring those documents to find out if there's more money for ShotSpotter, which Brandon Johnson promised during the campaign to end, saying that it is an unfair sort of way of policing black and brown communities, where Larry Snelling was out there sort of supporting ShotSpotter and sort of making the case for it in front of the city council. So that's going to tell us sort of, I guess, who won that argument, which will be very interesting.
ShotSpotter, a very controversial piece of technology.
Yes.
Here that basically detects what it seemingly is gunfire. Dan, you wanted to jump in here for a second?
Yeah, I was just going to say that Craig is on a good point here. With Snelling, one thing that they're really pushing hard is, you know, he's a Chicagoan, and we've gone from reformers from out of town, like, remember, Jody Weiss, Jay Fed, before that, way back, Orlando Wilson after the Summerdale scandal. And then we come back to people who have their roots here and who are known commodities. But can the known commodity really change an institution or even want to change the institution? I think that's not clear to us yet. We've tried to do some background checking on him. We actually have, at WBZ, have filed a lawsuit to get all of his misconduct files.
Because there have been a couple of misconduct complaints.
There have been more than a couple. There have been so many that there's an exemption to the law that says if it's unduly burdensome for them to produce all these records, that they won't have to give them to you. And that's what the Chicago Police Department tried to claim, is that there's so many of them, it will take us too long. So, you know, let's settle that, guys.
You're not giving up that easily. I know you, Dan. You're going to go all the way up to the top and get those.
We're in Cook County Circuit Court.
You're going to be in court.
It is a fundamental question. Can somebody who spent the better part of 30 years in a department that has been beleaguered by scandal after scandal after scandal really be somebody who can sort of firmly reform the department? This is the seventh major attempt to reform the department. Can an insider do it? That's what Brandon Johnson is betting.
All right, Brandon Johnson's other big task right now, Matt Spiegel, the migrant crisis, more busloads coming this week. Do you feel that this plan for tent cities somewhere, we don't really know where yet, is going to be one that sort of quells some of the problems?
It doesn't seem so. It's heartbreaking, because for years, having driven by or walked by Tent City and feel this, you know, outbreak of empathy, now that is the goal for these people that we're now seeing in front of police stations or at my local grocery store. It's the biggest kind of test of human empathy that I have felt as a city dweller in a long, long time. It feels terrifying and helpless on their behalf.
Well, sure, it's the South Loop, the First District Police Station. They're on the floor. They're outside. You can't miss them on State Street.
And there's a sense of cooperation in the neighborhood as people are trying to do everything. I see people at the grocery store constantly buying two of something and handing something out. But it just feels, and you'll have to help me, as a sanctuary city. I'm not sure what sanctuary cities across the country are doing, if not tent cities.
You know what? This whole sanctuary city thing is getting tested, Heather Sharon. You almost think that Governor Greg Abbott in Texas, when he started sending migrants here in buses as what appears to be a political stunt. This is exactly what he wanted. Infighting, trouble, Democrats in big cities not knowing what to do.
That is exactly it. He has essentially exploded the city's deficit to somewhere in the neighborhood of $200 million. I would imagine he thinks that that means that the money he spent sending these people with not much more than the clothes on their backs to Chicago and New York, which has an even bigger budget crisis than Chicago and Illinois does, money well spent. And I think that that's what we heard from some older people on the floor of the city council today, that they did not want to see this infighting, that the sort of the anger and the pain and the frustration should be directed to the people that are sort of manufacturing this humanitarian crisis. That's fine, but these people still don't have anywhere to live. And are we really a city that's going to tolerate 2,300 men, women, and children living nowhere but the floors of police stations and airports? That's what's confronting
Chicago.
And as
you mentioned, there was a hearing in city council and a committee on this crisis right now. There were a lot of harsh words from Carlos Ramirez Rosa, the floor leader, Democratic Socialist, against the governor, saying the governor hasn't stepped up, the state hasn't done enough. What's his beef?
Well, part of his beef is that the governor talks about progressive being, you know, his progressive values, but he asked the deputy chief of staff, Christina Passione Zayas, what's the state done? The state has provided funding for one center that would be more of a health center, but that center is not open yet. And he says, how many other centers or shelters has the state spent money for? And she said, none. And he waited like several seconds and said, I want that to hang in the air.
Very dramatic.
None.
Yeah.
And then says, this governor can talk all he wants, but the state has failed us, and we need more help from the state. So that's what he's basically saying is, we need this is a sanctuary state. And he said, and we're taking the whole burden ourselves, and it needs to be spread
Although
around.
There were officers in the Pritzker camp that shot back and said, we've spent something like $330 million helping you on this. So where's the truth here?
Well, the truth is that it's a hot potato between all levels of government. And we're not talking about the federal government here, because immigration is a federal issue. So, okay, let's blame Abbott in Texas or Republican governors in other parts of the country that are busing them here. Not coincidental that the Democratic National Convention is here next year, and there are more and more buses coming every day practically. But the federal government in other waves, think about Bosnians who came here 25, 30 years ago, Somalis, being spread out into cities that need workers, which Chicago also does, by the way, with low unemployment, but also into cities where there's a lower cost of living. So Wichita, Kansas is offering money to migrants to come to them. Hmm. So where's the federal government doing in terms of determining where's the
best place
to resettle people? It's a little more complicated and not exactly analogous to those refugees, because these are not refugees. These are asylum seekers. Right. They're not undocumented. Yeah. They're not immigrants. They're not refugees. They are migrants who are seeking asylum. And they are free now, many of them, to work finally, at least the federal government.
With Biden authorizing work permits now for Venezuelans. Okay, Matt, you wanted to jump in here.
Well, it's just the fact that had boggled my mind when I caught it was that some of the federal relief money that went to Texas was then used to bus these people here, which is insane. And the money that has gone to Texas so far has dwarfed the federal money that has come to Chicago. So there is an indiscrepancy on all levels.
Well,
here.
And apparently Heather probably knows the details of this contract the best of us or Craig, but we're talking about the same company it's a vertically integrated industry.
Making
they're making money moving them, and they're making money.
Yeah, let's clarify. You're talking about Garda World that the city struck a tentative agreement with for $30 million to build these tent cities. They've been involved in moving some of these money.
They're one of the few firms that can do this sort of work. So if you want somebody to move, you know, large numbers of people from one state to the other, you go to firms like this, and they have the expertise to build these sort of winterized base camps, as the mayor says. This is really the issue that has opened up a breach between the Johnson administration and the Pritzker administration, and they had been really in lockstep and working very well together, unlike the governor's relationship with the Lori Lightfoot administration. But this, when the governor said, I don't think these base camps are the right thing to do, that sort of opened up this sort of breach, that we heard that anger from Carlos Ramirez Rosa. Look, we are all hands on deck trying to care for these people. How dare you criticize the best of the bad options that we have settled on, is the sense in the Johnson administration.
Although, but there are other people like Andre Vasquez saying, no, I don't like this. So could it kind of tank this base camp deal?
It is possible, but there are no options at the moment. And one of the explanations today was it takes too long for our procurement system to allow us to do anything else. We need to change that system, but right now there are 8 buses came today. Something like 6 or 7 came yesterday. They are coming every day now.
This is not a new problem,
yes,
though. They said it's a terrible choice. I thought that was a startling admission. And there may be few choices, but this choice, that company was rejected by Denver. That company is may or may not be the only one that's up to the task, but to say that haste is the reason for this kind of waste and inefficiency when the problem has been percolating for a year, I don't know. But let's be honest. What Pritzker is saying about these tents, does any of us think that these tents and anybody's going to survive the entire winter in Chicago in those tents? People from almost equatorial countries, okay, mm-hmm, being put in tents.
And they are winterized or described as being winterized.
Supposedly they're supposed to stay at 70 degrees. With the HVAC
And we still don't know where they're going to go, because there was one proposed location, and then that got community pushback. So many questions
all these. Denver is, which is supposedly a sanctuary city, is sending people here.
They are
not keeping anybody.
There's a proposal in the council to make Chicago no longer a sanctuary city.
And I go back again.
That's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah. This is exactly what Governor Abbott wanted.
Infighting.
You have Alderwoman Jeanette Taylor saying it's like pitting black versus brown.
And it absolutely is. I mean, because she was very clear to see sort of neighborhoods like Woodlawn, which has suffered for decades from disinvestment, to see this influx, millions of dollars, literally, for the benefit of the people that they don't think belong here, frankly, is heartbreaking for people in that community.
All right, I got to move on to one of the, today this happened, COPA. They announced they investigated these allegations that cops engage in sexual misconduct with migrants. This had been alleged earlier this summer. They found no justifiable evidence. Is that the end of the story here?
I think it is. I mean, obviously, there'll be people who are upset about it, but they basically said, we've investigated. We have now found sufficient evidence to warrant any charge, and so there will be no charges, no accusations.
All right, another police issue. Heather, two officers charged with an unjustified shooting by the state's attorney of an unarmed man in Pilsen last year. Found by a judge after a 2-day trial to be not guilty. What are the circumstances here?
Well, the judge ruled that the two officers reasonably considered that the man that they fired at had a weapon, so they were justified in firing at him. It turned out the man did not have a weapon, and essentially he said that the state's attorney had not proven their case. And this is, I think, one in a number of instances where officers charged with wrongdoing by the state's attorney's office is asked for a bench trial, so not a jury, just a judge, and has been acquitted. There was an officer was accused of pinning a teen in Park Ridge, my hometown, to the ground. He was acquitted by a judge. There was that situation a couple of years ago where there was the officer on the red line who shot somebody, and she was acquitted by a judge. So it's clear, and I think Kim Fox said to reporters afterwards, that's not coincidental. It's much harder to convince a jury that an officer did not act inappropriately than it appears to be a judge.
Well, a bench trial, much a greater success rate for defendants in these cases. And Dan, I got to mention, millions of dollars in payouts stemming from the great investigative work you did, exposing all this widespread sexual harassment in the Park District, lifeguards, and then the cover-up of it. So how much is the city on the hook for, and is this just the beginning?
It could be just the beginning. $1.9 million to 3 lifeguards so far, and they went and approved them at Park District board meetings by saying, we've settled with a Jane Doe, all in favor, say aye. Didn't say how much they're spending publicly, didn't say the nature of the case, that it was sexual misconduct against lifeguards. We found out through, public records requests, and there's another case pending in Cook County Circuit Court. I would bet it's not the last one.
All right, well, we got to get to all the really good news happening in Chicago sports. Matt Spiegel. Oh, the Bears. That 41-10 seems like it wasn't even that close. I mean, they took out Pat Mahomes and kind of, took their foot off the gas at the end there. How much worse is this going to get for this team?
Oh, it's a good question. Here's the thing. The first two games, we were pretty sure it was on Justin Fields. This third game seems to be mostly on the coordinator, Luke Getsy, and maybe some of the targets. So that means that everything is a problem. You've got a real disaster on your hand, and they very well might be the worst team in the NFL.
Which they were last year, too.
It's true. They haven't won a game in 342 days. And when that's the case, eventually everyone in the building starts to feel like a loser, whether they are or not, and that can lead to things getting even worse. This game this weekend against the similarly 0-3 Denver Broncos is being called the Caleb Williams Bowl by some, since he's the defending Heisman Trophy winner, expected to be the number one pick in the draft. But it's hard to imagine a fan base and a team and a city and, frankly, a radio station that is looking forward to doing that again, scouting another quarterback.
Can we get Taylor Swift to come to this game, too?
Is she dating anyone in the Broncos?
She's going to New York. She has to sit through a Jets game like everybody else.
That was just such a marketing ploy, too. Everyone took advantage of that, the NFL and the Kansas City Chiefs and Taylor Swift. You know, at the top of this is the general manager, who's only in the beginning of his second year, Ryan Poles. But isn't this kind of an emergency break glass situation when you had all this cap money to spend, you had the number one pick in the draft, and you got apparently worse?
I suspect that he is not afraid of the double tank, the 2-year backtrack. Because he referenced it before he even came here.
The early years. Why did you get 2 years to tank? I don't understand that.
Well, it buys you some time, doesn't it? And this quarterback is not his. He invested in the offense to try and give the quarterback a chance, but he will get a chance to have his own quarterback and maybe even a second head coach to go with that quarterback. And that could happen as soon as next year.
But I just say, look at his draft picks so far. Look at his free agent signings. Name one player that has stood out as a super all-pro player.
I can't. I have tremendous concerns. In fact, today I said that once again they lost the Chase Claypool trade. They're going to lose that every day somehow,
right?
Because they gave up a second-round pick for a wide receiver who's been a disaster. But he's going to get a little time and space, I think, unless Kevin Warren, the new president, has other ideas.
That's the thing. Kevin Warren is the president and CEO. Does he come in and exert himself with George McCaskey and say, look, I'm in charge. This kind of futility can't stand with this organization. We got to do something drastic.
I actually think that what Ryan Poles did was pretty clever. He's got an investment in Justin Fields, but oh, by the way, they have 2 first-round picks, including the one from Carolina, which are in insurance against Fields. And I think there's no way this conversation didn't happen with Kevin Warren, where he says, look, if Justin's bad, then we may have to pivot to losing or to not prioritizing winning on the field, and set ourselves up for next year. And I bet Kevin's on board with that.
But
that's just my gut.
Is also terrible.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Let me ask you about the Cubs. I mean, what went wrong down the stretch here?
It's really been sad because they played so clean and so smart all year, but in the last 3 weeks, things have fallen apart, and now the defense is a problem. Nothing hurts a manager more than a bad bullpen, and they don't have anybody that he can trust, and it hurts the players too. The players, everybody starts to kind of look at the lineup card and think about, do we have enough runs? Do we need to get more runs? And maybe get a little bit tighter when you can't trust anyone in that bullpen. I think that'll be the legacy of why this thing went wrong.
All right, and so fans are turning now to the Blackhawks starting their preseason. Connor Bedard, the phenom, but can one phenom make a pretty bad team actually competitive?
Not right away, but boy, he's fun to watch. That first game, that first preseason game, just watch the highlight reel. He does special things. Mm. Already in his first preseason game ever, he's going to set people up with a chance to succeed, and they'll be good before long. Maybe not this year, but pretty soon.
All right, then Dan Mihalopoulos wants to know that when he goes to watch the Fire play Miami on Wednesday, is Lionel Messi going to play?
I don't believe so.
I think he hasn't played in a while, but it's day-to-day. And I read that this is the number one highest grossing game, because a lot of the MLS stadiums, other teams have smaller soccer-specific stadiums with 20,000, 30,000 people. This is going to be the highest grossing game in the history of the league in ticket revenue. I mean, my cheap seats were $175. I think my wife is learning about it this week. But
Messi has single-handedly raised the salary of every employee in that league. And seriously, this is fact. And the fact that he's getting a piece of the television packages from Apple has transformed sports media and player empowerment.
Well, if he doesn't play in Chicago, he better look out for Dan.
Yeah.
Apologize to this.
Apologize to all the soccer fans that sold out that stadium. Craig Delamore, you know, we should get to the national news. I'm sure that the national broadcast will talk about this, but shutdown are pretty much... Federal government shutdown is kind of in the cards now, right?
It's almost in the cards. We've seen Congress pull it out at the last minute. The big thing is it going to make a difference in people's lives? Probably not immediately, but if it goes on more than a week, I think you'll start seeing some effect.
All right, well, we'll get to more of this over the credits, but we are out of time. So our thanks to Craig Delamore, Heather Sharon, Dan Mihalopoulos, and Matt Spiegel. And that is our show for this Friday night. On a programming note, beginning next week, you can catch Chicago Tonight at 5, the Week Interview at 5:30 and 7 on Friday evenings and streaming anytime. So if you like to watch at 7, you can keep watching at 7, but you can also watch at 5:30. Now for the Week Interview, I'm Paris Schutz. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe. See you at 10 for Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. So Kevin McCarthy here, though, it's either you accept a deal that your hardliners are going to hate, and then, like, you threaten your speakership, basically, or you just careen toward the cliff.
Well, and the hardline deal can't get through the Senate, so it doesn't work either.
Right.
And
speakership's been on the line from that crazy week of, unprecedented, this clown car that we saw when he became the speaker.
I think that's the technical political term for it.
Yeah. Well, didn't he expect that this is going to come to this?
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to be a multilingual law firm that provides translators for a variety of languages.